Hey, good evening, everyone. Thank you for inviting me to come. Thank you, Mrs. Gabay, for hosting the lecture tonight. Thank you, Avigail. For those of you who don't know, it seems like not everyone knew Avigail is my sister-in-law, Anesti. But Avigail was actually my first introduction to the Lichtman family a little more than 12 years ago when I knocked on the door on Matzah Shabbos. Avigail was the one that answered the door. She said, good vach. I think we had braces back then. She was my first welcome, and I appreciate the arranging and opportunity to all be inspired together. Pesach time is a time that we all speak about having guests. You know, everybody has guests on Pesach. It's just a matter of how many guests you have, whether you're having at the Seder, whether you're having for Yontif, if you're guests by somebody else's house. But Pesach time is definitely a time for guests. And there's one guest that we all have by the night of the Seder, and that is Eliyahu HaNavi. We all know we have a special kais. It's kais shel Eliyahu. Eliyahu HaNavi comes to every single Seder. This is actually a cute story with Rabbi Levine. Rabbi Levine was a big tzaddik from Eretz Yisrael. He was Rabbi Yashiv's father-in-law. He used to visit people in jail. And in the 1940s, when a lot of Yidden were in jail, from the British were in charge then in the early 1940s, and they had people in jail, so the only person that was allowed to visit them in jail was Rabbi Levine. So Rabbi Levine one time came to jail right after Pesach and to visit all the Yidden that were there, and he asked them if they were able to have a Seder, and they said, yeah, we were able to keep the entire Seder. They let us do everything. The only thing is they didn't let us open the door by Shvei Chamascha. But Eliyahu HaNavi, we know, is the guest that we all have. There's one other time that Eliyahu HaNavi always comes to visit us. And there's a moel that is a very special time to me, that is also at a bris. We all know Eliyahu HaNavi comes to the Seder, and he comes by every bris milah. We designate a special chair, and we say a short tefillah, and Eliyahu HaNavi comes, and he benches the baby. So the question is why. I was wondering, why is there a connection, why specifically Eliyahu HaNavi, that it comes specifically to the Pesach Seder and to a bris. And each one has a reason for itself, but I was wondering if there was somewhat of a connection between the two. So I was thinking perhaps the following. Eliyahu HaNavi, as those of you who learned Navi in the beginning of Malachim, it discusses, and it says that Eliyahu HaNavi never died. Eliyahu HaNavi never died. He was walking in on the road with his student, Elisha, and the chariot came, and Eliyahu HaNavi went, and he went straight up to Shemayim. He never died. He went straight up alive. That's why Eliyahu HaNavi has the ability to come back to this world, because since he's not dead, sometimes he comes back as an old man, sometimes he comes back as a younger person, but he has that ability to come back because he never died. You could tell the men in your family, those of you and the men of Tamid HaChachamim in your family, I'm sure they all are, there's actually Rabbi Chanan Wasserman discusses if Eliyahu HaNavi went up to Shemayim, which he did, is his wife allowed to remarry? It's a big question Rabbi Chanan Wasserman discusses. Is his wife allowed to remarry? On one hand, he didn't die, but on the other hand, he's not here anymore. That, if any of the men want to know what was spoken about tonight, you could give that over. They could stay up all night clearing that shiloh. But we see that Eliyahu HaNavi, he represents life. And he represents a new beginning. Every time he comes back to this world, it's a new beginning for him. Sometimes he comes back as an old man, but every time Eliyahu HaNavi goes up and he comes back down, that's a new beginning. There is no death when it comes to Eliyahu HaNavi. He represents life and a newness and a new beginning every single time. By a bris, this for sure makes sense. When we come to a bris, we celebrate a new life, a new child, the potential to grow in Torah and Ma'isim Tovim. For sure, by a bris, that makes sense. And in general, the babies, you know, they're all full of life. They're always crying. They're always making noise, not just the baby boys, but the baby girls as well. The baby girls are usually not scared of me. But you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, they're all full of life, exactly when you want them to be sleeping. And for sure, a new baby represents a new life. But also by the Pesach Seder as well. When Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, the Chazal tell us that they became a new nation. It wasn't just simply the same nation as before. They marched to Matan Torah 49 days later, and when they left Mitzrayim, it was a brand new start. It was starting all new. And in Yecheskel, they were in the Memtes Shari Tuma. They were down in the dumps, and Hashem brought them up, gave them a brand new start from the beginning. In Yecheskel, in Perek Tezayin, the psukim compare the Jewish nation allegorically to a newborn baby, and it talks about a newborn baby that's abandoned and neglected. Perhaps you learned this in high school over there. Those psukim in Yecheskel, and the mefarshim say, and the psukim tell us that this baby that was abandoned and neglected was saved. And the mefarshim over there say that it's referring to Klal Yisrael at the time when they left Mitzrayim. When they left Mitzrayim, they're compared to a newborn baby. They were in the Memtash Shari Tuma. They had nothing spiritually, physically in Mitzrayim. They had the Shibud, and they were down, all the way down, as low as you could get. And they were abandoned. Then Hashem freed them, and Hashem saved them, and it brought them back up to a new life that compares a new child to the Shibud in Mitzrayim, and when we were saved spiritually and physically. And the psukim over there, which are psukim that we say by a bris, you may recognize the psukim. Ve'ever alayich ve'areich mispeisesas b'demayich. Ve'ever alayich, Hashem says that I passed you, I saw you. Ve'areich mispeisesas, I saw you wallowing b'demayich, in your blood. Meaning the blood that they were going through because they were hit by the Mitzrim and they were tortured, that they were saved from, and they were able to grow higher in Ruchnias and in Gashmias because they had a new start. That's the similarity between Eliyahu and Navi, that always represents a new start, even though someone is down, also by a bris and also by Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that in general is the month of Nisan. The month of Nisan, which is in a couple days, is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, that we had Parshas of Chodesh yesterday. That's the first month. The Yontif of Pesach always has to come out in Nisan, and always in the month, always in the season of the spring, in Chag HaAviv, always in the spring. The spring represents a new start, a new blossom, a new life. It started a little bit in the times of Tu B'Shvat as well, but it wasn't so recognizable now. Now it's able to blossom, and we're able to see a brand new start, a new beginning in the times of the spring. Nisan Aviv stands for Av LeYud Beis, for the 12 months, the Yud Beis Chadashim that we have. The Aviv, the spring, is the Av LeYud Beis. That's the beginning, that's the brand new start, meaning even if the world was created in Tishrei, but Nisan is when we begin counting. One more thing, notice that there's 36 averos in the Torah that the punishment is kares. 36 averos. It happens to be that 34 of them are averos. One of them is eating chametz on Pesach. The punishment for eating chametz on Pesach is kares. There's only two mitzvos that the mitzvos asay. It's positive commandments that if a person doesn't fulfill those mitzvos, then they get kares. Only two out of the 36 are positive commandments. And those two are the bris milah. If a man doesn't have a bris milah willingly, he becomes bar mitzvah and he still doesn't do the bris milah, that he's punished by kares. And also the Karban Pesach. If someone doesn't bring the Karban Pesach in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, also that is kares. What's kares? Kares means a cutting off of life. May these two mitzvos, they represent life and a new start. The punishment for not fulfilling these mitzvos is the kares, the cutoff of life. And so many people nowadays, if you look at them, you could tell that they're down in the dumps. And whether they've gone through challenges, they're sad, and if they're so bothered with, and they're so busy with so many things, I guarantee if you ask anybody, they'll tell you that they're very busy. They're single, they're married, they have kids, they don't have kids, they're in business, they're sitting and learning. Whenever you ask somebody, I guarantee they're going to tell you they're very, very busy. And people are so busy that, unfortunately, they're busy with so many other things that their spiritual life is falling asleep. They're just letting their life go by the wayside. They do things by rote, whether it's a man, yeah, of course, they'll go to davening, they'll go to the tefillah, but their concentration is not on it. When it comes to girls as well, a lot of people don't realize, I give classes in Hilchos Tefillah, that women are obligated to daven every day. Women are obligated to daven. And it's something that there are different parts of davening or different parts of obligation. We have to go through every single one as far as Birchas HaTorah, Birchas HaShachar, Psukah DeZimra, and Shemoneh Esrei, but really women are obligated to daven. And a lot of people know the halacha that if women are an oinis, which means that they're not able to daven, they're too busy, whether it's with their children, whether with their jobs, there is a leniency that we're able to rely on, that we rely on the Rambam's opinion instead of the Ramban. Could be, you'll recognize some of those halachos, but people just say, hey, I'm an oinus, I'm an accident, there's nothing I can do, I'm busy, I'm working, I'm busy with my children, whatever it is. But people, so many times, they're busy with so many other things, and they make sure that everything is perfect in every other area of their life. But when it comes to Avodas Hashem, sometimes it just it ends up falling by the wayside. And yes, we will know of certain heterim, and yeah, I'm busy, I'm allowed, I'm not obligated to daven, but the same way somebody is so careful in the other parts of their life, whether it's their job, whether it's their house, whether it's their personal life and their family, and they have to be so careful in so many other ways, but when it comes so many times, unfortunately, to the Avodas Hashem aspect of it, we find that that falls asleep. And a person needs to utilize every single situation that you have to chaperein, to be able to do a mitzvah. If a person has, let's say, 5 minutes, you have 5 minutes before you realize that, you know, you got your kids off to school, or you arrive to your job early, you know, you travel to your job and you ends up you don't have any traffic, so you have some extra time. So now what? I have a few extra minutes, so I could I could make a phone call, I could text somebody, I could go look up something online, and, you know, enjoy myself, to utilize somebody's time, to use the time, to use with vigor, is so important, not to waste your time and to use the ability to have a mitzvah. I'll tell you an amazing story, which happens also to be with Rabbi Levine. There were times when the British were in charge of Eretz Yisrael, there were bombing, and there was a war going on in the beginning of the early 1940s. There were bombs falling, and Rabbi Yisrael Grossman is not such a famous person, but it could be. If you read the Maggid Speaks, if you look at the introduction to the Maggid Speaks, my father's book, he talks about how Rabbi Shalom Shadron originally came to America together with Rabbi Yisrael Grossman, and he was very close to my family. He's not alive anymore. He's nifter a few years ago, and so he was walking around the streets, and he was trying to find a bomb shelter when the bombs were falling, and he happened to have been passing Bikucholim Hospital. And he saw in the distance that Rabbi Ari Levine was walking with somebody else into Bikucholim Hospital. So he wanted to see what was going on. Maybe somebody was hurt. Maybe he needed to help. So he quickly ran to Bikucholim Hospital. And he saw, you know, a few blocks away. He quickly ran there and he saw what they were doing. He saw Rabbi Ari Levine went over to all the dead bodies. There were lined up dead bodies in Bikucholim Hospital, and they didn't even get a chance yet to bury them or to give them a proper burial. They were just killed from all the bombs that were falling, and he lifted up the cover covering over the bodies, and this individual, the other person that was with him, he took a picture of the face. He covered the blanket. He went over to the next body, uncovered, and the other person took a picture again, and from person to person. And Rabbi Yisrael went over to Rabbi Levine and he said, you know, I don't mind, I, you know, please excuse me for sticking my nose in, but you know, where's the covered hamace? Where's the you know, respect for the dead, and where's the honor that you're just taking pictures? He says, no, I'll tell you why I'm doing it. He said, I heard a rumor that there's no time to give all these bodies a proper burial, so I heard they're just going to take all the bodies and put them all into one mass grave. And once the husbands are buried, then the wives are all going to be agunas. There's not going to be any witnesses to who the wife is. And technically, if you think about it, even if it was a wife, nowadays a man doesn't marry two women. You know, it would be a sticky situation even if the wife was not able to be found. He says, I was trying to convince somebody to come, to get a photographer to come and take pictures, at least we should have a picture of the dead bodies. And this way we have at least somewhat of a testimony just in case something happens. And I couldn't convince anybody to come because it was also dangerous. Finally, I convinced this person to come with me. So at least I wanted to take a picture before if anything happened. And here was a time where people were running for their lives, and rightfully so, they had a right to be hiding. But he used the opportunity. He was thinking, how can I use this opportunity as a mitzvah? And so many times we have situations where you hear somebody, you know, Nebuch, something happens, and you know, do you feel so bad for the person? You say, oh, what a shame, that's so terrible. But a person's supposed to jump in and get involved, especially for women. You know, they're so involved in chesed. A person needs to be able to jump in and realize and think, call, how could I be involved? How could I help out? And that's just a matter of just thinking how a person could use their time wisely. And I've said before, I've said many times, and I see some pocketbooks here, and I'm willing to guarantee that anyone who has a pocketbook, whether you have one here, whether you have one at home, that there's at least for sure a pocket Tehillim in your pocketbook, or a pocket Mincha Ma'ariv, because I've told this to women in various different places, and I feel very strongly about it. If a person comes, a woman comes to a waiting room, so, you know, whether you come to a doctor's office or some type of waiting room, whether it's a doctor's office or something else, and there's always magazines. You come to a barbershop, at least I know by men, if you go to a Goyish barbershop, there's always magazines on the table. And for sure, for a man, when there's tzinius issues, so for sure, you know, they shouldn't be reading those magazines. But even for a woman, you have in your pocketbook, you have a Tehillim, you have an opportunity to say Tehillim a few minutes. So for sure, there's certain magazines that even women should not be reading, whether it's about such narishkeit of, you know, out in the goyisha world that we're zeichet to have no shaykhas to. But even a kosher magazine, whatever type of magazine, the political, and it is important to know what's going on in the world and things like that. Not a problem. You want to relax, you want to read it, it's not a problem. Mishpacha, Ami, those are all fantastic. It's all great. My wife reads them cover to cover. But when a person has to utilize their time, a person's allowed to relax. But a person, why do we have a pocket tillum in our pocketbook? And why do we have a small sitter with us? Because we know that opportunities happen, that we have a few minutes here and there, a few minutes there, and to utilize that time every single moment. If a person is just, their ruchnius is just sleeping and it's going, you know, by the wayside, so fine, so I'm sitting back, relaxed, I want to kill some time. There's no such expression of killing time when it comes to Yiddishkeit. A person doesn't need to be intense. I always say it doesn't. No one wants to be labeled as intense. But to utilize a person's time, to not just sit back, but to use that time properly and wisely. You know, there's a I don't even know what to call them. There's a CD that's out. It's like a group, two guys that they sing. It's called Eighth Day. I'm sure the Yalili. I'm sure you all heard of it. So they have like a second album. I'm just see tons of advertisements for them over Pesach, but they have a CD, the second CD, we have it, my kids like it, so we bought it, and there's one song over there, and whatever you want to say about their music, fine, it's all very nice, but one song that they have, it's called Give It All You Got, something like that, and you know what I'm talking about? No? Well, they have one song, maybe some of you know about it, but there's one song, Give It All You Got, and they have one line over there. All the songs are in English, but a lot of the stuff that they sing, I can't even understand what they're saying. It doesn't seem to make so much sense to me, but if you know them, you know what I'm talking about. But they have one line over there that I think is great. And that song is talking about giving it all you got, that, you know, when you come up to Shemayim, they're not going to ask you this, they're not going to ask you that. All they're going to ask you is did you give it all you got? But they have one line that if you say you're tired, then I'll say tick-tock. You know, it rhymes a little bit with give it all you got. When you say you're tired, then I'll say tick-tock, which, if I'm understanding the Tiefkeit and what they mean, is that if a person's tired, yeah, it's hard, you know, you want to get out of bed, you have to get out of bed in the morning, and you want to take a nap, you want to relax, but I'm going to say tick-tock, because a person's time is ticking. Not, you know, to be so negative and to be so pessimistic that, you know, a person anything could happen to somebody, but just a person's time is going by, the day passed. What did we do with our day? So if a person took care of their children, or they made a parnasa for their wife and for their children, okay, that they're involved in chesed, they're involved in a mitzvah, for sure. But a person wants to be able to go to sleep at night and know that they did something, not just that, you know, they didn't cheat in business and they did their job properly, but a person wants, I would hope, a person would want a little bit more than that. That they, I davened today, I did a chesed, I made a phone call, I visited someone who was sick, I went to a shir, which is not easy for people, whether person has babysitters or whether anyone is busy, made the trip out to come to a shir. A person feels good when they go to sleep at night and they know that they accomplished something in ruchnius. And you know, I as I mentioned, I teach in the Beis Yaakov of Passaic. I live in Passaic, so I have this chus in teaching in the high school over there. So I was just recently teaching the halachos of Krishma and Hamapel. I just gave a test on it. So I teach halachos brachos and parts of halachos Shabbos, but I go through the day and I was teaching them the halachos of Krishma and Hamapel. So I was teaching them about Hamapel, that a person is obligated to say Hamapel every night, and the place can tell us that it's better to say Hamapel and to talk afterwards than to not say it at all. And for sure, you have to say Hamapel. And we went through the halachos about talking after Hamapel, when sometimes it is permitted, sometimes it's better not to, but sometimes it is permitted. And we went through a number of those halachos, and then one girl raised her hand and said, you know, let's say I'm already in bed and I'm really tired, and then I realized that I never said Hamapel, because she was used to only saying Krishma, and then, you know, she's not used to saying Hamapel. So let's say I'm tired and I already shut the light, you know, do I have to get out of bed to say Hamapel? So I said, yeah. I said, of course you have to. You know, just because you're tired doesn't mean, I said, if you want to use the word inconvenient, I said, there are a lot of mitzvos that are inconvenient. But there's such a thing as we have an obligation to say it. We pass in men and women. We don't consider it a mitzvah shezman grama, that say hamapil. A person can go to sleep any night and they're obligated to say hamapil. As far as talking, if a person needs to talk to a spouse or to their parents, kibbut aveim, or shalom bayis to a spouse, or for whatever reason, or an important phone call, they're allowed to talk. And we went through those halachos because many places can say that hamapil is not a bracha on this sleep specifically, that you're not allowed to talk afterwards. It's a bracha on sleep in general. And if you're allowed, if you need to talk, you're allowed to talk. We just have the bracha of hamapil before you go to sleep, because that's when we say it. That's when it makes sense to say it, not smack in the middle of the afternoon. But a person should definitely say hamapil, and if a person needs to talk, they'd be allowed to talk. But so I told her, yeah, I said, sometimes we're tired and it's hard to get out of bed, but that's the idea. A person needs to do it. A person has an obligation. You have to do it. And we have also in the Yontif of Pesach, we have the Aveira of Chametz, like we mentioned before, and the Mitzvah of Matzah. And we have to have only Matzah. Why we have only matzah and not chametz? And the Sfarim tell us very deep meanings in chametz and matzah. Why specifically matzah? What does the matzah represent as opposed to the chametz? And why when they left Mitzrayim, did they only had time to bake matzah? They were in a rush. Why were they in such a rush? B'chipaza in the Pasuk tells us they ran, they left out in a rush. Why were they in such a rush leaving Mitzrayim? By that time, they already had the 10 Makos, and they were in charge then. They ruled, they were in charge then. Why, by that point, why were they in such a rush to leave Mitzrayim? And the Sfarim tell us that matzah represents chipazin, which means a quickness and alacrity, and not just relaxing. The matzah is baked very, very fast. As you know, it's baked in less than 18 minutes. If you've ever been to a matzah bakery, it's really baked in much less than 18 minutes. They're machmir to try to bake it even much quicker. Matzah, chametz, on the other hand, has time to rise. Chametz is slow, it's a slow process, and you leave the challah on your counter, the bread on your counter, and eventually it rises slowly but surely. The chametz represents slow and taking it easy, and matzah represents the quickness and the hurriness and the enthusiasm for ruchnius. And that's why that's the idea of gebrachs. I'm sure you all know that those that brach and those that don't brach. What's the idea of brach, of not gebrach, and why do some people not eat gebrachs? Because the matzah that is baked so fast, so we're afraid that since it was baked so fast, maybe there's some raw flour inside the matzah, and if you put it in liquid, then it's going to become chametz. Meaning flour is not chametz. Matzah is made out of flour. Wheat is not chametz. Flour is not chametz. That's what matzah is made out of. But the thing is that it has to be baked very, very quickly and then not baked again. We're afraid that since it was baked so quickly, especially matzahs that have maybe a fold on it, you'll notice if you see some matzahs that have like a bend, like a fold, so some people break off that piece of the matzah and they don't eat it. They can't use it as a shalem anymore, obviously, but they break it off, they don't eat it. Because if there's a fold, maybe there's some flour inside that didn't get baked, and now if you put it into liquid, then now it's going to be baked. Because that's the whole idea of the matzah, to be quick and to not waste any time. And why do we find so many people are in, you know, they feel like their life is a sob story and they're forlorn and they're sad? And it's because of people have challenges. And the truth is that every single person goes through challenges. Everybody has something. A person may look down the block and they look at that person and they think, oh, that person has such a perfect life. But it's not true. And Klal Yisrael as a whole, throughout all the generations, has gone through many, many challenges. And it's a miracle, everyone says, it's a miracle that we're still around. I actually was in Farakwe today by my in-law's house, and Mommy has like a new thing on the fridge, a quote from Mark Twain, which is a famous quote, to how the Jew is immortal. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Like Mark Twain he talks about all the different nations and all the different countries, and he says that the Jew is a miracle that they're still around. Through all the Churban and the Gullus and the pogroms and the crusades and the Holocaust and the blood libels. The blood libels was all around Pesach time. All the Christians used to make up that the Yidden used to have to kill a Christian child, and that's why they used the blood to bake the matzahs. Which makes, of course, absolutely no sense. I never understood it since I was 4 years old when I started hearing these stories, that the matzah is not red. So how in the world can we use their blood to make the matzah? Besides, it probably would not taste very good if the blood would be in the matzah. But that's every year was a new thing, a new blood libel, and they killed many different Yidden because they claimed that they killed a Christian child to use the blood. It's absurd. All the anti-Semitism, the fact that the Yidden are still around, are just shows how the Yidden have a koyach, even through all the challenges, Klal Yisrael in general has that power and that koyach to persevere, to stand up to their challenges, and to exist even through. Hashem gave Klal Yisrael as a whole that ability to stand up to all the challenges. And that's not only true on Klal Yisrael as a whole, but that is true with every single individual. Every single individual has the inner strength to persevere, to serve Hashem, especially not just to live up to the challenges, to live life throughout their day-by-day things that they need to take care of, but just in general, as far as Avodas Hashem, which is, of course, the Iker, that is the main thing, that a person has the ability, every, I don't know where it says it, but everyone says it, that if Hashem gives somebody a nisayon, so it must be that they have the koyach to beat that nisayon, which could be, and everyone does have that ability. Hashem gives everyone that ability. And we can't know why Hashem gives us all challenges, but there's a beautiful story that that my father says over, that a girl one time came to a Rav and she was crying, and the Rav asked, what's the matter? She said that I used to be so sick, I had a terrible disease, and when I was during that disease, I was crying to Hashem and I davened every day to Hashem with such intensity, and now I'm better, I'm totally better. So the Rav said, so what's the matter? Why are you crying? She said, because my davening is not the same anymore. I don't daven with the same intensity. I don't daven with the same vigor. Sometimes, maybe, perhaps, I don't even end up davening. Now that my tzara is gone, now that my challenge is gone, so I don't feel that connection anymore. I don't feel that connection to Hashem. And that's what I feel bad about. And I'm coming to you for some guidance to how to reconnect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you see how amazing it is that a person took her challenge, and she used it not to just mope and to stay in bed all day, but she used it to persevere and use that challenge to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when we have a tzara, when we use a tzara, when we have a tzara, what do we daven? We daven from a tehillim. And that's so apropos. Who made tehillim? David HaMelech made a tehillim. David HaMelech wrote tehillim. David had such a hard life. He had Shaul, and Shaul was chasing after him, and his sons, Avshalom and Adoniyo. And David wrote the Tehillim as he was going through all these tzaras, and he was able to pick himself up from all these tzaras and use that to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we daven Ma'ariv, I give a class, I don't know if you heard, there was like a 2-year-old boy in Passaic that was hit by a car. So they started a conference call. Every night, 9:15 at night, they have a conference call, they say Tehillim, and I give a 10-minute shiur at 9:15, and then at 9:25 I hang up, and then they say Tehillim on the phone. And I went through the different parts of davening, and I was talking to them the halachos of, it's only a shiur for women, halachos of shachris, are women obligated to daven shachris, are women obligated to daven mincha, and ma'ariv, and going through the steps, and you know, 8 minutes halacha and then 2 minutes hashkafa. When we're talking about ma'ariv, I was teaching them the halachas of ma'ariv, and how come we find so many women don't daven ma'ariv, although I know plenty of women that do daven ma'ariv, but the Mishnah Berurah says that the custom is for women not to daven ma'ariv. Ma'ariv, we find the Sfarim tell us who made up ma'ariv. The Gemara Brachas tells us that the Avos, they were misakin the three tefillos. Avram is misakin shachris, Yitzchak mincha, and Yaakov daven ma'ariv. Ma'ariv represents darkness because it's at night, and darkness means when someone is going through a hard time. Yaakov had such a hard life. He with Esav and with Lavan, and what he went, that Rachel died, what he went through with Yosef, and what he went through with Dinah, and Yaakov, through all the trials and tribulations, he was still able to daven and keep to his Avodas Hashem. And that is what Pesach represents, that through all the hardships that Klal Yisrael went through in Mitzrayim, they were able to be brought up through, of course, through the help of Hashem, they were able to persevere. And so many times when you think like things are lost, and you're ready to throw in the towel, and you know it's time to give up, but a person has to pick themselves up, and you daven, and you connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem gives everybody that inner koyach. And I was just telling you, last Sunday was the Mir dinner, and I had the schus of learning in the Mir for 8 years, and one of my rabbis, Rabbi Elephant, he was coming in to America for the dinner, so I went, and I brought my wife, and I introduced my wife to my Rebbe. It was the first time she met him. And so, those of you who have heard of Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, Rav Nosson Tzvi was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir. He was nifted a little more than a year ago, and you know, now his son, Rav Blazer Yudel, is the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir. And Rav Binyamin Kabach, who is, you know, one of the also one of the Rosh HaYeshiva of the Mir, so he spoke by the dinner, and of course he was talking about Rav Nosson Tzvi, you know, he's still so fresh in our minds. And Rav Nosson Tzvi, I don't know how much of you know about Rav Nosson Tzvi, if you read his book, or if you, any of your husbands or siblings, or for sure learned in the Mir. Rav Nosson Tzvi had Parkinson's, and he, for the last 25 years of his life, he had a horrible case of Parkinson's disease. He had absolutely no control over his body. I was chavrus with your brothers in the Mir, right? So he had absolutely no control over his body, and he didn't even take the best medicine that controls the Parkinson's, because it affects a person's memory, and you know, he didn't want to affect his learning, he didn't want to forget his learning, so he didn't even take the best medicine, and he would shake back and forth. I remember he used to give shmuzin Friday afternoon in his house. From, you know, when I was a bacher there for 3 years, I went every single Friday and had a makom kavua right next to him on his right, and one of the honorees by the dinner Sunday night had a makom kavua right next to him on his left, and his knees would bang against my knees, back to the other person, back and forth, and I could, like I always say, I could still feel the banging against my knees. He had no control over his body. And my introduction to the Mir was when I first came to the Mir, it was about 14, 15 years ago, so I waited online for an hour and took a feher. I came in, Rav Nosson Tzvi was lying on a couch. He wasn't even sitting on a chair. He was lying flat on his couch, shaking like a leaf. He actually wasn't even shaking so much. You could ask anyone who knows any men that were in the Mir, and they'll know that when Rav Nosson Tzvi had a lot of strength, so he shook a lot. But when he had absolutely no koyach left at all, he hardly shook. He was just... He could hardly shake. That's how weak he was. He was laying on his couch. He had absolutely no strength even to shake. And when I came in, that was my first time, well, actually my second time ever seeing him live. I once saw him by Alavaya years before when I had been in Eretz Yisrael for Sukkos. But it was his time to take a medicine. So his son walked in and he picked him up from the couch and he handed him a cup of juice. He made a shahakal, took a drink of the juice. I tell this story to all my students when I teach Hilchos Brachos about making brachos on juice when you take medicine. So I always tell them this story. He took the juice, he drank the juice, handed the juice back to his son. His son handed him the medicine. He put the medicine in his mouth. He took the cup of juice back from his son. He drank, and then he swallowed the medicine, handed the juice back to his son. Then his son lowered him back down onto the couch, laying flat on the couch. And then I sat on a chair right next to the couch and I leaned over and said my shtickle Torah. He stopped me after about 20 seconds. I had prepared months for this shtickle Torah. And he stopped me after 20 seconds. I said, okay, that's it, you're in. You know, there's still plenty of people waiting online. And he just, you know, he didn't have any more strength to listen after 20 seconds. But Rav Binyamin Kabach was saying he quoted a Medrash. I don't remember where the Medrash was. But the Medrash says that every single person in the world has Isurim, has challenges. And he was talking about Rav Nosson Tzvi. Rav Nosson Tzvi was able, through all his challenges, was still able to persevere and lead the greatest, you know, the biggest yeshiva in the world. But he was saying that every single person has challenges. And you look over here, you look over there, and you think, oh, this person has such a perfect life, and I wish I could be that person, I wish I had that, and I wish I had that, like she has, or like he has, and it's nonsense, because you don't know the whole package, you don't know the whole story. And I mean, as you go through life, it's not that I'm not such an old person, but I'm around long enough that I know, I see people that theoretically people could definitely be jealous about, but you find out things later that there's really no reason to be jealous about. And there are people that you know already, I'm sure, that they have some good things that, and some things that are not so good that you know about, and that's why you're not jealous of the person. But you see that other people could look at them and theoretically they could definitely be jealous, because they wouldn't know what they have, what baggage that they have. And I used to think this when I was a bacher. You know, it could be it's silly. For me, it worked. That's all I could say. For me, it worked. You know, sometimes you look around and you think you could be jealous about somebody, and you see, oh, you know, I wish I had that, I wish I had this. The way I looked at it could be it's nonsense, but for me, like I said, for me it worked. So, you know, I could just tell you what worked for me. That you look, I figure there's two ways that a person could be jealous. Either you could say, I want to be that person, I wish I was that person. Or a person could be jealous that, no, I want to be me, but I want to have that person's parnasa. I want to have that person's nachas from his kids. I want to have that person's looks. I want to have that person's... something specific. I want to have that person's car, that person's spouse. I want to have that person's house, whatever it is. So those are the two ways. I figured the first way is ludicrous. I mean, it makes no sense. Right? You want to be that person? That's nonsense. You're not that person. It doesn't make sense. Hashem made you who you are. It doesn't make sense to want to be that person. You can't be that person. And to be just, oh, I want to be myself, but I want to have what that person has. I want to have that guy's house. I want to have that guy's car. I want to have that guy's job. And I want to have that guy's spouse. And I want to have this. I want this. I want that guy's nachas. And I want that guy's family. Then that's stam silly, because nobody's like that. Nobody's perfect. Nobody has everything. Nobody knows any aspect. Every aspect in their life is perfect. If you ask anybody, like, how's life? Okay, they'll say, Baruch Hashem, everything's great. But everybody has something that, and listen, this I wish it was different, and I wish that, you know, I had that person, but that's not the way Hashem made me, and that's not the way Hashem made you. And Hashem gave everybody their lot in life because that was specific for them, and that is their mitzvah, to be like that. A girl just called me a couple weeks ago. She comes to my Tuesday morning share. I have the schus of giving a Tuesday morning share to married women in Passaic with Lama Tes Malachos. Right now we're doing Hachos Cholamoid. And so most of them are married women. There was one single girl there. And she called me a couple weeks ago, about a half hour after the share. She said, I'm so-and-so. I come to your share. I was the one who was asked a question about this. And she wanted to know, she said that she can't drink wine or grape juice. And she remembered from last year that she didn't remember if there was 4 cups of wine that we drink by the Seder or 6. So right away when she said that, I realized, okay, I'm talking to Baal Tshuva. And it seemed as if last Pesach was her first Seder that she was ever at. But she can't have wine or grape juice. She can't have any fruit juice. She can't have milk. She can't have fruit in general. She can't have gluten. She can't have... And she can't have anything. I mean, she can't. She, there's like nothing she could eat. I mean, Avigal, she makes you look like you're lucky. I mean, she can't have nothing. So she wanted to know, first of all, as far as what she should do for Kiddush Friday night. She drink from the wine. So that I told her right away, that Friday night, this I already taught to my students in class. You could ask your sister, I'm sure she knows these halachas, that Friday night, you don't have to drink from the wine on Friday night. If you're hearing Kiddush from somebody else and you're not saying the Hagafen, then you don't have to drink from the wine. It's mitzvah min amufcho. The Shulchan Aruch tells us it's good for every single person to drink from the wine. It only has to be a tiny, tiny sip. But to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush Friday night or Shabbos day, we paskin, you don't need to drink from the wine. So right away I told her off the bat, Friday night she doesn't have to drink from the wine. She's not allowed to drink the wine or grape juice or anything. But she wanted to know what to do for the Seder. As far as the wine is concerned, and grape juice, she can't have grape juice, and what she should do in regards to matzah. She can't have matzah, she can't even have oat matzah, spelt matzah, she can't have anything. She heard that there's a certain type of cracker, she's allowed to have rice, so should she have rice cakes instead of the matzah, even though it's kidneyous, but for her, you know, she wanted to know, perhaps she would be allowed to have rice. So I said, for that, I'm going to have to get back to you. So I called her, I did the research, I called her later that day, and actually just, I called her, and she's whispering, she said, okay, I'm just by a shear, I just have to step out. I said, wow, you go to shears all day, you were by me this morning, and you're shear this afternoon. I said, you don't have to leave, I could call you later. She's like, no, I was in a side room anyways, because I have problems with my back, so I can't sit on a chair, I have to like listen to the shear laying down. So she has, I mean, challenges like you cannot imagine. And so I told her the halacha is that, you know, for the dalad kaisais, she should have either coffee or tea, because that's Chamar Medina, preferably coffee as opposed to tea, but tea is also good enough. And for the matzah, I told her that she doesn't have to have anything. There's no point in having the rice. The Shulchan Aruch says that if it puts a person into sakonet, Shulchan Aruch together with the Mishnah Berurah says if a person is not obligated to pain themselves for the matzah or for the wine. And if a person gets headaches from the wine, fine, they're still obligated. As far as if a person could eat grape juice in general, for women, I've kind of said it's supposed to be a little bit of halacha tonight, so there is leniencies in regards for women as far as not just drinking wine. There are plenty of places that say a girl, even a man, could drink grape juice by the Seder. There are those that say that grape juice is not good enough. And my wife told me that Rabbi Weitman in Tag came to her one year, and they told all the whole school that you have to have, all girls have to have only wine, and they have to drink the whole cup each and every time. And then my wife got drunk by the end of the Seder. This was before we were married. But she drank 4 cups of wine every single time. So not everyone holds like that. If you want to have grape juice, you're allowed to have grape juice. If you want to mix Kala Kavod, that's even better. Then you'll have 4% alcohol. So if the wine is 8%, so fill up the cup halfway, then it's 4%, and then you fill up the grape juice half the rest of the way, that's fine. But for her, I told her she should have, this girl, I told her she could have coffee or tea. And for the matzah, I said, you should just have nothing. There's no point in having some cracker. She found the cracker, that shahakal. But what she told me, and I was so upset when she told me this, which is why I'm bringing this in, she said that last year when she ate by the Seder, she was eating by somebody, and the person, someone told her that, you know, that what she's doing is terrible, that she's not fulfilling any of the mitzvahs, and how could you have nothing? At least you have to have something. You know, you can't just have nothing. How you're not, what is this? You're not fulfilling the mitzvah. And she said she was very hurt, you know, like she didn't choose to have these issues. And, you know, she wanted to know, you know, that's why she was calling me. Should she force herself to have the grape juice? She said, you know, maybe she would be sick for a while afterwards, but, you know, is she obligated to do it? So I told her, I said, this is your mitzvah. I said, besides the mitzvah of having the dalet kosos and having the matzah, I said, but for you, this is your mitzvah. I said, it's a mitzvah in the Torah to guard your health and to take care of yourself and to be healthy, to live and to take care of yourself. I said, for this Pesach, this is your mitzvah. Not just, you don't have to have, that you're allowed to have coffee. I said, no, your mitzvah is to have coffee. And I said, I would venture to tell you that your mitzvah is more chashiv, is more important than our mitzvah. My mitzvah of eating the matzah, my mitzvah of eating the wine and the grape juice. I like matzah. I don't know about you guys. I like matzah. I like wine. I like grape juice. And, you know, it's, if anything, maybe it's enjoyable. The maror, maybe it's not so enjoyable. But the other things, I enjoy it. And it feels good to do the mitzvah. L'shem Shemayim. Okay, if I enjoy it, maybe it's not so L'shem Shemayim. But you have the mitzvah. You know you're fulfilling the mitzvah like everybody else. I said, for you, this is your mitzvah, and your mitzvah is greater than anybody else's mitzvah sitting around the table that you'll be sitting at. And for her, this was her challenge. I mean, besides all the other challenges, but for the Seder, this was her challenge that she has to go through. And that was her special mitzvah. There was somebody by the name of Yosef Friedenson. Rabbi Yosef Friedenson, you might have heard of him. He was Nifter just a few weeks ago. And he was a Holocaust historian. He died at around the age of 90. I met him once, actually. And he was very involved in the Gudis Yisrael. He was the editor of Das Yiddish Wort. It was a Yiddish newspaper. And he was in the Holocaust. He was in a slave labor camp in the times of the Holocaust. And when he was in the slave labor camp, there was a factory chief that was in charge of his group, was a guy by the name of Bruno, like by Popeye, you know, the guy from the name Bruno. And there was somebody else, the guy over there, his name was Akiva Goldstein. And they were in the slave labor camp back then. And this guy, Bruno, he was a Nazi, but he, at some times, he was nice to the Yidden in the slave labor camp. So So they asked him, they said, listen, you know, perhaps you think we could bake matzah this year for Pesach. And believe it or not, he said, fine, you could bake matzah. He said, oh, but, you know, we don't have any flour. Is it possible you could get some flour for us? You know, they bribed him. So he said, you know what? Fine, I'll tell the Polish workers that were in charge of the ovens, the Smith's ovens, and I'll give them days off from their work, and I'll force them, I'll tell them, you know, I'll give them off, and they have to go get me some flour, and I'll let you have the flour. But they were still scared, because they knew that he could just, you know, snap at any moment, and he could change his mind and be upset. Sure enough, he got them some flour, they made a few matzahs, and when it came the day of Pesach, he brought their bread, you know, to eat, and a very, very little bit of bread, and usually everyone's running after the bread to eat the bread. Of course, on the day of Pesach, nobody touched the bread. All they did was eating their matzah. And he went crazy. You know, I got you the bread, and nobody's eating the bread. And he started screaming at them, and he threatened he was going to kill them. And he says, don't you realize that your God has forsaken you? And he called over this Akiva Goldstein, who was this Yosef Friedenson's friend, and he says, don't you realize that your God has forsaken you? So this Akiva Goldstein, he says, not totally and not forever. Says he hasn't forsaken us totally and he hasn't forsaken us forever. He says, not forever? You don't think he's forsaken you? Look around, not totally. Look around what's going on with all you Jews. You're all being killed. So the Akiva Goldstein said to him, yeah, but you let us bake matzah, didn't you? And to us, that was very important. It was very important for us that you let us bake matzah. And these were people that, in the Holocaust, when they were for sure putter from eating matzah, there was no way they could be held accountable for not eating matzah that year. But they persevered through their challenges. To them, it was important to eat the matzah. And come what may, they were going to work on it to be able to make sure that they eat the matzah. And that is what challenges are all about. We find in Parashas Bereishis, Hashem punished the Nachash. Right? The Nachash was the instigator, the snake in the Eitz Hadas, and Hashem kicked him out and he said, you're going to be, what was his punishment? You're going to eat the dust of the earth. And the Mefarshim ask, why is that a punishment? That he's going to eat the dust of the earth? Now he has food wherever he goes. Yeah, you hear such a question? The Nachash, wherever he goes, he has food. He never has to ask Hashem for food. Adam and Chava, they have to worry about Parnasa, they have to make a living, they have to, and Chava had to go through child labor, childbirth, and all the women afterwards. But the answer is that now Hashem was telling the Nachash, I have no shayachas to you. I don't want you. I don't want to give you any challenges. You have nothing. Your life is perfect. You crawl on the ground, you have dirt wherever you go. Don't talk to me anymore. But that's not the way we are. We have challenges in order to be able to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to connect in that way. But just end with one more idea. Chazal compare the Shibud in Mitzrayim to a pregnancy. To pregnancy. How so? The Gemara in Saita tells us that the beginning of the Shibud in Mitzrayim was really very easy. The Mitzrim, they came along with the Yidden. You've heard of this Gemara perhaps, that the Yidden, the Mitzrim, they worked along. They worked with them. The Gemara even says that Parai himself, he schlepped some of the packages and he worked with them. And they paid Bnei Yisrael in the beginning. But as time went on, it got worse and worse. All of a sudden, the Mitzrim backed out. They're not going to help anymore. Parai, of course, backed out. They stopped paying them. And then eventually, they had the Avodas Perech and they hit them very hard. And that is exactly like a pregnancy. In the beginning, it's not even noticeable. In the beginning, it's come out not even noticeable that the person's pregnant. Eventually, then the embryo becomes recognizable, and then later it becomes more and more uncomfortable. But why are women able to persevere? Why are they able? Because they know that there's an end in sight. However long it is, whether 9 months, whatever it is, a person knows that the end is in sight. And By the Shibud in Mitzrayim, it was the same way. Even though we didn't know there was an end in sight, but Hashem was Chishev Esaketz. Hashem saw the end. He had a cheshbon with the 400 years. It was supposed to be 400 years. And different answers, how, if it's promised 400 years, how was Hashem able to go back on that? And then he made it into only 210. But Hashem saw that the time had come that he has to make it only to 210. Hashem was watching over us. And that is the Yontif of Pesach. And that's what the maror, right? You ever notice we have two types of maror. I tell this to my students also. You have two types of maror. We have the romaine lettuce, which is not bitter whatsoever, and we have the white stuff. We have the horseradish, right? That's very bitter. Ever bother you? Ever wonder that how could we have the lettuce, the romaine lettuce, for maror? It's not bitter. It's not bitter. Vayimaras chayeim is supposed to symbolize the bitter, and we talk about how bitter it was, and then we take that romaine lettuce and we use it for Shulchan Aruch in our salads. I mean, like, why? How could we fulfill the mitzvah of maror for that? So the answer is the following. The Shulchan Aruch says, you could tell this to the men in your family by the Seder, Shulchan Aruch says it's better to eat the romaine lettuce than the horseradish. It's better. And not everybody agrees to that, so if you see somebody trying to be macho and putting in a lot of the white stuff, it's fine. There's what to rely on. This is actually, it's a discussion. What's the correct translation of the word chazeres? The Mishnah Psachim says you should use chazeres for the maror. So is the correct translation the romaine lettuce or the horseradish? But the reason why the Shulchan Aruch says it's better to use the romaine lettuce, because he says that is exactly like the shibud in Mitzrayim. That it started off sweet. This romaine lettuce, eventually, it'll turn bitter. Not just that it eventually will rot and turn spoiled, but eventually it will turn bitter, whether it's kept in the ground longer, or whether even outside of the ground, but eventually this romaine lettuce would turn bitter. And the Chazon Ish actually holds that the romaine lettuce that you want to fulfill the mitzvah of maror has to be somewhat bitter. It has to be starting to get bitter a little bit. If not, then you're not fulfilling your mitzvah. But we usually don't go with the Chazon Ish in regards to that. The minig is that our romaine lettuce is not bitter whatsoever at all. We just use regular romaine lettuce. And the reason why that's good enough is because that is exactly like the shibud in Mitzrayim. It starts off sweet, and eventually it'll turn bitter. And that represents, in general, the Shibud in Mitzrayim, and the Yontif of Pesach represents bitterness in general. That it's actually the opposite, that things can start off bitter. A person could go through a lot of challenges, and Hashem gives every single person the koyach to go through and to persevere through these challenges. And that is the Yontif of Pesach, that we see a newness, a freshness, that a person could be dealt, you know, a knockout blow, and you feel like, you know, it's like bottom of the ninth inning with two outs, and you feel like that, you know, you could throw in the towel. There's nothing else to do, and you know, I just give up, and I'm just gonna wait till this passes. But no, a person has to be able to pick their head up high, whether it's through the mitzvahs that's gonna give them the koyach, or whether it's through the davening, a tehillim. A person is able to connect to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and hopefully through this Yontif of Pesach, that'll give us the strength and the koyach to overcome all of our challenges and to keep strong in our avodas Hashem. Thank you all for coming, and thank you for listening.